Hey everybody, Andrew Zarian here on the Mattman Podcast. This is a special interview we're going to be doing. We're doing a couple of these every now and then now, where we're hoping that Rich and I are going to do a lot more. Rich is not here today, unfortunately, because of the timing, but I do have a really cool guest. My guest today, and I'm going to go into detail about what he does, but I want to introduce him first. Justin Wang, YouTuber, right? Would you say YouTuber?
Yeah, primarily, yeah.
Primarily a YouTuber. You could go to his channel on YouTube. Obviously, you search for his name. You can find it there. What's the exact link? I had it here, and I closed my video out, obviously.
It's youtube.com/wangwangwang.
Wang, wang, wang.
Perfect. Yeah, you see, Wang was taken by itself, and I, for whatever reason, it didn't occur to me to just put Justin Wang instead of, you know, Wang, 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 and now I'm kind of stuck with it.
Now you're stuck with it. That's it. It's a perfect name. Justin, funny story. I started the story before we went on. I stumbled on your content, not because of YouTube's amazing algorithm, but because of two drunks sitting in a bar talking about your channel really loudly.
It's the best way to find out about me.
Amazing, right? Word of mouth still works.
Yeah, like the drunks and hanging out around places, that is my algorithm.
Perfect. They were talking about it, and they're like, oh, Justin Wang. And then do you follow, you know, and they were talking about, one was a musician too, so maybe you may know him. I don't know. I didn't get his name. This is like a year and a half ago, but one was a musician, and the other one, I don't know what he did. They were talking about the channel, and they said he does a lot of internet pop culture stuff. And then they brought up, and what caught my ear was he uses the ECW sound effect. And I looked over, I go, do you mean K-k-k? And I go, yeah.
Yeah.
And then that's kind of how I discovered your content. And just this morning, I was watching your latest video that you put out. So it's kind of funny how you kind of discover stuff. But you're a guy from Queens also. I mean, that's our network's name. But tell me, I want to know a little bit more about you. How did you get into content creation? Because you have over 200 videos on YouTube. You're putting them out regularly, and they're always an interesting topic. You don't really stick to one genre. We'll talk about professional wrestling, but you kind of do a blend of pop culture, comics, pro wrestling, even video games. So how did you kind of get into this?
It's actually kind of this meandering journey, I guess, because it started off, I went way back when I wanted to do a guitar channel. But I moved on from that, and then I started listening to a lot of podcasts, specifically Bill Burr's podcast a lot, made me think, hey, I want to do something like this. But at the same time, I was thinking, well, you know, Bill Burr is a famous comedian, and I'm just some guy, so people aren't going to necessarily tune in to watch me talk about shit. So what I wound up doing at first was making a Let's Play channel where I would kind of transition into talking about things during the gameplay. That slowly turns into me just talking about things. At the same time, I just happen to have a lot of useless knowledge about internet things and stuff like that. So eventually that became the focus.
So looking at your YouTube channel, I know that the Max Headroom video was your most popular one. It has over 1.2 million viewers, something around there. But was that your breakout, or what do you say primarily was your content breakout?
The first one, the one that really got the ball rolling, I think, would be the one about Taylor Swift secretly being a 4chan user.
Okay, perfect. Great story.
Yeah, like that one, it happened. It did good at first, but then it just happened to be the same week that she wound up putting out a new song out of nowhere. So at that point, I'm already ranking on the algorithm for Taylor Swift searches, and then she happens to put out a song, which makes a lot of people search for her.
That was
super lucky.
So I mean,
it worked out like that.
It was kind of like the luck of the draw that the timing was. It kind of worked out with the timing.
Yeah,
but obviously, it takes way more than luck to kind of sustain the audience, because you obviously have continued on a great path on YouTube with the content that you create. Was that the one that people discovered and you got the most pop for subscriptions and viewers, or was there like kind of like a build? It was like a momentous thing where the ball started rolling and it continued.
Well, what happens is because I did have a lot more episodes of that series on my channel. So what happens is if you have a series that's very binge watchable So people watch the first video and then go back and watch all the other ones. The algorithm loves that. So once that starts happening, you just get recommended a lot more. So it winds up feeding back into itself.
Yeah, it's amazing. You should be very proud of the channel that you've done. And the content is great content. You know, it catches people's interests. And I myself, as someone that creates content, I look forward to your stuff every time it comes out, which is great. And sometimes, you know, they don't all have to follow into what I like. And that's kind of what I like about yours. In a weird way, and I was describing it to a friend, and I described it to him as this. Remember when the Reddit front page wasn't catered to your interests primarily? It was just a mismatch of possible things that you kind of like? I kind of look at your page like that, because it's random. You know, you have like a wrestling thing, and then you'll have a Resident Evil video, and then you have a Ninja Turtles video. So it kind of all caters to this fandom of mine, which is perfect.
Yeah, there's a lot of, even though the stories kind of come from all different aspects of culture, I find that the topics I pick, there's a lot of crossover, which I guess makes sense because they're all things that I'm legitimately interested in. Although, like, there was actually a time when I was kind of worried where if I picked a topic that was a little too out there, I'd be like, oh, people aren't going to want to watch this and blah, 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 blah. But I found that a lot of people actually, when I talk about things that they'd never heard about, they're still interested to hear the story. So it's a lot more freedom to just be able to talk about whatever I want to talk about.
Yeah, I'll give an example. Like, my wife isn't into a lot of the internet, you know, the internet subculture kind of topics, but she'll watch it all the time when it's on. Number one, because of your hair, because she's amazed by it.
Oh, yeah?
that's a big selling point for her. But two, because you delivered in a way where I feel like someone that, like you said, if someone that's not really into something, they could kind of get into it because you make it very easy for them to like it. And I think that's a difficult way to create content when you're catering to both people that know a lot about a topic and some people that are just being introduced. You know, to kind of catch both of them, it takes an ability to do that.
Yeah, I think it's easy to fall into the trap of assuming, especially like when you're giving out information, that everybody has the same starting base of knowledge that you have, so you don't explain things. So what I try to do is I'll try to explain it just enough that anybody can kind of get on board, but not so much that the people who are already aware get bored.
Got it. Yeah, I think it's great. I want to kind of touch on the wrestling stuff. It's almost like a little tease you leave with the wrestling videos, because there's like a wrestling influence in every couple of your videos and to some extent. For me, was the Ric Flair Murders Your Family video.
Oh man, Fire Pro. I forgot which Fire Pro that was. Now I did the video so long ago,
for people who don't know, one of the Fire Pros had a storyline mode where essentially you build up, and then Ric Flair murders your wife.
Yeah,
right. That's the finish.
I don't think he murders your wife. He murders your tag team partner.
He murders your tag team partner. Rick Flair commits a heinous crime. So that was.
I think he gets your wife to leave you. That's what it is. He murders your tag team partner and gets your wife to leave you.
What a terrible man that Ric Flair is.
and they call him Dick Slender in the game get around copyrights.
Yeah, that's freaking great. How did you get into professional wrestling? I was always
a wrestling fan. Ever since I was a kid. I had VHS tapes that my mother had when I was a kid, like from before I was born, that I would watch.
Oh, that's wild. So your mother was into wrestling.
Yeah.
Okay. So what's the first memory of pro wrestling that you have, almost? Like one memory that you say, okay, now I'm a fan. I like this. I'm a fan.
See, it's hard because I definitely watched it kind of like before that point in time when I can remember things. So there's no key moment where I'm like, yeah, I'm a wrestling fan now. It was just, that was what I would watch, but leading into the point where I'm conscious of the things I remember as a child, you know?
For me, I always said, you know, years ago when I would tell people this, I would say, oh, it was definitely Hogan and Warrior. But that's a false memory that created. It was 1990 when that happened, and I was 5, 6 years old. I don't really remember watching wrestling around that time period. But the real time period for me is like SummerSlam 91, because I was at the Garden when I, you know, I saw it happen. I remember that vividly. Do you still follow it all the time?
On and off. There's the past, I was super into it around the time. You know what? The CM Punk pipe bomb was kind of like what brought me back into it after being away from it for so many years. And then from that point on, for years and years and years, I was just watching wrestling nonstop.
I think that was a story for a lot of people. That moment brought back a lot of... I mean, I'm assuming we're kind of in the same age group.
Yeah.
I think our generation kind of scattered off a little bit, and when it was a real moment that happened, we kind of came back to it.
Yeah, a lot of people, I've heard that same story from so many people.
Have you gotten anything like, you did this great video and I highly recommend people to go look at it. It was a Mortal Kombat video that you did. And, again, very nonchalantly pro wrestling makes a play in that. You were talking about, you know, the misconceptions with Mortal Kombat and some of the rumors that we all grew up with. And there is a Shawn attack. There's something called a Shawn attack, and you piece it together. And I had never heard this theory before, honestly, before watching your video, that it was Midway having the Shawn Michaels character kind of in the code in that game, right? For the WWE game.
It was that theory. I originally, when I made that video, I had set out to just make a video about different things that were unexplained in Mortal Kombat 2. And when I was doing the research, I came across the fact that there's a entire WWF logo hidden inside the game's code. And then I'm thinking, I made the connection with that, and when you start up an arcade machine like Mortal Kombat 2, there's a debug menu, and it has all these different switches, and most of them are obvious things, like number of fatalities, number of times people played a Scorpion, things like that. And then there's one that's called Shawn Attacks, S-H-A-W-N, spelled the way Shawn Michaels spells his name. And then I make the connection with the WWF logo, and the fact that they were also working on WrestleMania the arcade game. Like, that was theirs. I believe being worked on it around the same time. So I'm thinking, I have no concrete proof of that, but maybe there was a chance that there were some plans to have the wrestlers involved in Mortal Kombat.
I mean, that's wild. I mean, if it happened today, it would have been like a downloadable, you know, a downloadable option that you could have gotten. But the fact that could have happened if at any level in the 90s, it's just unbelievable to think about, you know?
Yeah. What's cool is now there's this, I guess it's like a mod or a fan-made game or something that combines Mortal Kombat with the sprites from WrestleMania the arcade game. There's this one dude I follow, NBA Jam, the book on Twitter. He's constantly posting videos. Like, he had one of, it was like Doink the Clown on Shao Kahn's stage fighting Scorpion or some shit.
I'm pulling up this site right now. I'm trying to find this now. I think these things are really, I mean, really interesting to kind of look back on and kind of reminisce about these awesome games from our childhood. I mean, that we lived. Oh, this is actually awesome. He has a picture of The Undertaker dressed in alternate red and black gear because he's behind a blue screen. For the game.
Oh yeah, they had all kinds of cool stuff when they were making that game. I think Kane had it. I think they all had different colors because I guess working with the blue screen, it affects the colors in a certain way, and then they just changed it in post production.
Yeah, yeah. No, this is freaking really really cool. So when you create the content, like I want to go to the process of it. How do you come up with the idea? How do you write everything out? How long from the point of content beginning to end does it take for you to create a video?
What I do is I kind of, as I think of an idea, I have a Samsung notes file that I just keep all the ideas in, and I put them in the back of my head and think about them as I go on to other things. A lot of the topics I already know a lot about, so I kind of know what direction I want to take it into. And then I'll look up an article here and there, and eventually I'll settle on which one I want to make next. And then, like, when I really specifically decide, okay, this is the video I'm making, which, between the research, and I will script it out for the most part, I'll write out the scripts, but then I'll say the words when I'm doing them. I'm not going to stick to the exact words. I'll just, you know, basically have the bullet points of what I'm going to say.
And you do multiple takes, obviously, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. The entire process, like, it depends a lot on the topic, but in general, I would say 4 days from beginning to end.
So from recording to editing to posting, it's about a four-day process to create this.
Yeah, well, even before, I'm counting the time before recording when I'm still planning it out and researching.
You know, that's amazing. And if you consider, right, generally your videos are around 10 to 15 minutes, that there's a four-day process for each video. I think a lot of people that kind of demand a lot of content too often from people, like you put out one essentially once a week, there's a new video that you put out.
Yeah.
For people who don't know, like my content, it's really quick. I do no editing. I leave everything in because it's an interview or it's a podcast. So there's a lot of room for forgiveness with pauses and ums and ahs. But for something that you do, you kind of need it to be tight and you need to keep it at a certain limit so it doesn't overextend itself, essentially.
Yeah, like in these two, well, actually now, like the past couple months, I did have some longer videos. The John Teeter one was a half hour long. The Resident Evil 1.5, that one was 20 minutes. And those did take a little bit longer. And I was honestly a little bit concerned that they might have went a bit too long. And I even cut stuff out of those. But then at the end of the day, people wound up liking them. And they liked them because they were longer.
So another video I just want to throw out there for our audience, because it's primarily wrestling. You have the greatest story from my childhood, the tale of the two Ultimate Warriors.
Yes.
This says a lot, right? We were talking about word of mouth before, right? About how mm-hmm. I discovered your content and somebody told me at a bar, just talking about it, and I jotted down the name. This is the greatest story of word of mouth. If you were born sometime in the 80s and you were in school sometime in the early 90s, you heard that there were two Ultimate Warriors and the first one died. That is something that we all heard. The other story that I heard was the Ultimate Warrior got paid not to wrestle anymore because he was too good.
I never heard that one.
That was the best one. My friend Joseph Tenari I want to say third grade, told me that his father knew somebody at WWF and they paid him $2 million to stay home because nobody could beat him and it wasn't fair. So this is a great story. So did you ever find out where the myth began?
I have no clue where, how that began specifically, or how it spread to such a degree internationally, basically. Like, everybody, that rumor somehow, in a time before everyone was on the internet, managed to cross the ocean and get fucking everywhere.
I'll tell you to the point how it wasn't just with wrestling. Like, my father was a wrestling fan, but he never subscribed to, like, Meltzer or any, you know, he wasn't, like, a wrestling fan like that. He would sneak me out of bed to watch wrestling on Monday nights to watch prime time. So he wasn't, like, this diehard wrestling fan. He told me a coworker told him that the Ultimate Warrior had died. And my father's an immigrant that was a mechanic. So, I mean, the fact that it went on so many levels of storytelling, and it went to, it really became a worldwide phenomenon on the how the Ultimate Warrior was dead, the original one, and this new guy came in, and it didn't look like him, and that's why he had short hair. I love that. First of all, that is the only real thing that distinguished the difference between the Ultimate Warriors. One had long mom hair from the 90s, and the other one had a shorter hairstyle.
Yeah, it was like a more cropped mullet.
I think that's amazing. And the obvious explanation is that the original one died.
Yeah. And people came up with all kinds of things too, like one has different sized hands and feet and shit like that. But actually, in the video, I took a few pictures and compared the hands and feet sizes and concluded that they did in fact stay the same size.
Can you imagine this? You know what? I would say It's quite possible for this rumor to be around today. We have flat Earth theories that go around. Yeah. We have other conspiracy theories that happen. The fact that people, I'm willing to bet that there would be a segment of the internet population that would believe that this is not the same Ultimate Warrior. The other one that you touch on, that Kerry Von Erich and the Ultimate Warrior were the same person.
Yeah, that was another one. Well, and that was part of it.
That was part of it. And Carrie died, and then the new one came and took over. I found this so entertaining because it brought me back to a time where I literally remember third grade when I was told that it's not the same Ultimate Warrior, which is wild, and that he was paid off by the McMahons because he was too good. so when
that's a really good version of the story that I've never heard before.
I don't know how much that story would have spread. I don't know if it was only him that came up with this story, or it had. He's the only one that I ever heard it from, and I told people this. You know, you're told this, and I told my cousins. I'm like, oh, you know, the Ultimate Warrior's not dead, but he's just sitting at home on a fat stack of money because they're paying him because he's too good. He's the best fighter in the world, the Ultimate Warrior, best fighter. I find that video really fun. What's your top three videos that you've created? Now, again, I want to recommend this to everybody. Go search for him, Wang on Twitter, Justin Wang, obviously on, Justin Wang on Twitter, Justin Wang, YT on Instagram, and Wang 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 on YouTube, which I think is the greatest username ever. What's your top three that you did, enjoyment wise to film, to record?
Enjoyment wise? One of them was, one of my favorite ones, enjoyment-wise, was actually this video about, I was on Twitter one day, and I saw this video, I don't know if you've ever seen, there's this hoax that happens a lot. It's basically people, like, making memes and shitposting, but journalists tend to be oblivious to these kinds of things. So there's this comedian, Sam Hyde.
Yeah, of course.
And whenever there's a big, like, mass shooting or something like that, people will be like, oh, Sam Hyde's the killer, this guy, look out for this guy, He's been caught by the FBI, or the FBI is looking for him, and they'll post the same picture of him with the gun. And there's been so many times when actual news agencies have actually reported this as fact, even though it's just people on the internet shitposting. So BuzzFeed made a video about basically warning people to not fall for this trick. And it wound up being just like a five, six, 7 minute video of me making fun of their video.
Oh, that's great. Yeah. By the way, the picture, a lot of people spread that picture of Sam Hyde with the blonde hair and the black t-shirt.
Yeah.
That is a terrifying photo of him. And it's, yeah, absolutely. You know, you kind of look at it and you kind of look and you're like, you know what? He could be the guy.
Yeah, that's why people fall for it, because in that picture, he just looks like a guy that would have done some shit like that.
Oh, my God. Dude, honestly, your content is awesome here. Give me another one, just so people could go check it out, too. Another one that you really enjoyed creating. Obviously, the Taylor Swift one is great. You have a tremendous, I mean, I believe I probably have gone through all of these on a drunken night, just sat down and watched it. Like, you have one that the Borat character was ripped off of somebody else.
That was a good one, yeah. Yeah, I enjoyed making that one.
The latest one, I like the Resident Evil one that you had created, obviously. And there's a whole bunch of these. Obviously, the content changed over time from the early ones to now. And I kind of like seeing the evolution of content and how people make it. What was the biggest change for you from the time that you started to now as far as evolving the content? Because obviously it has the same feel and you really don't go high budget with the quality, which says a lot about the stuff that you're producing, right? The content that you're producing, that you don't need to have this crazy lighting and this studio, you know, camera setup to be able to put out great content. I'm a big believer on, you know, you do something good and it'll obviously break through the wall and do great. How did you transition your content? Like, what changes did you make from the beginning to end?
Well, the very first couple of videos when I'm still doing those Let's Plays, I have like a 720p webcam. And I'm recording it with a Bandicam.
Oh, my God.
Which is, I even bought the premium Bandicam, so I didn't have the watermark.
That's great.
I did, like, two videos like that. And then I started doing them in other ways. But I still record every, I still save everything to my Bandicam folder. But I mean, I guess gradually the biggest, the biggest shift, because the Tales from the Internet series, it's actually a series that I had for a long time before it got popular. And so it went from being, it was always my favorite series to make on the channel. But at first I realized that like people weren't so interested in it, but then I would see that even though at first it wouldn't, pop as hard as if I had had, to, I mean, compared to if I had done a video on a trending topic, but I noticed that over a long period of time, they would still get more views because it's evergreen content as opposed to a news story or a fad that people care about for like half a day and they're over it.
Yeah, I think it's amazing how sometimes certain things don't pick up until it does, right? And then they go back. Yeah. Are you seeing a growth in the older stuff that you've produced?
Some of primarily the Tales from the Internet series. Those even the oldest videos, those ones still do very well.
So one of the videos that you have here, and I have to tell you, I went down a rabbit hole and I kind of thought of your stuff when we were talking about this. You have one that the XFL led you down to erotic fan fiction.
Oh my God. What, yeah.
So that is, I don't know how much you know about this, but that is a tremendous part of pro wrestling right now, is the bizarre erotic fan fiction surrounding the Shield.
I was aware. Especially like when the Shield debuted was around the time that I was still like watching a ton of wrestling. So I'm aware of how the Shield fandom can be, but I didn't know how prevalent it is right now.
It's really weird. And so we went on this, my co-host Rich and I were, which I want to have you back on one day. And, I definitely want you to talk to him too, because a lot of the stuff that we're talking about, stuff right up his alley. We were talking about this, and we started getting, and it's a lot of women that write the fan fiction, mm-hmm. and it's a lot of it's like homoerotic fan fiction surrounding the Shield, and a love triangle amongst them, and a lot of the mm-hmm. writers are women of this fan fiction, and we made a tweet, and we just said something about how ridiculous this is. I can't begin to tell you the amount of hatred we got from random Shield fan fiction lovers. Where it was like we said the most vile thing, that it wasn't like that it was nuts, and then this went down a weird rabbit hole of X-Men fan fiction that we discovered, because people started sending us the bizarro X-Men fan fiction that's surrounding Jean Grey, Cyclops, and Wolverine, and Kitty Pryde. Kitty Pryde was involved in it's so bizarre. I mean, what you cover here is a lot of the stuff that if you started going on E-Bomb's World and You're the Man Now, Dog, you mm-hmm. kind of have a very different view of memes and how content on the internet kind of spreads. This is like the weird subculture of the internet that you kind of touch on, and it kind of goes into that fan fiction stuff. I have to tell you, it's terrifying. So don't ever say anything bad about Shield fan fiction. It'll be it for your channel.
I find that those types of wrestling fans, they're basically analogs of the Western K-pop fandom.
Yes,
they behave in the exact same way. It's hilarious.
That's exactly what it is. So I verge, because I'm actually having a lot of fun with this. So I verged away from my original question. Your top three videos that you've done that you've enjoyed. Obviously, you said the first one. What are two other ones that you really liked?
Shit. It's hard to single out specific ones. Recently, I'm actually like looking at like what videos did I do recently now. I mean earlier, obviously, I really liked the Max Headroom one. The Two Girls One Cup video was a lot of fun to make.
I have to tell you, I have not clicked on that video yet.
Yeah,
that's one.
I don't show anything too crazy in that one, because I can't.
I can't. I have PTSD from it, dude. I can't. From the time of seeing it first, I really can't even click on it. But I know that you got a lot of views on that one. I think that one's that one, I'm assuming if it's like anything else, it's pretty cool. The Street Fighter one was really good too. The
oh yeah,
changes.
That one was awesome.
The reason why I connected to it is because we had a laundromat by me, and they also had Street Fighter. I don't remember if it was a bootleg one, but I do remember hearing about the weird Street Fighters that a lot of the places in Flushing used to have.
Yeah,
and a lot of my friends would tell me that they had like different colors and different characters. So I remember that. I thought that was really cool. And you told a story about how, you know, like of your, you know, when you were a kid and you would go down there, and it kind of reminded me of like growing up too. So I kind of connected on that on a weird Queens level, which a lot of our viewers wouldn't connect on.
Yeah, it's sometimes there's aspects of the stories I tell that I realize are hyper local that people aren't necessarily going to connect with. But to me, it's an important part of the story to tell. And that was definitely one of those times.
Yeah, dude, honestly, you do some amazing content. We're going to put this up immediately on our website, and obviously I want people to kind of discover your stuff. What do you have going on? Are you planning anything else other than continuing the series? Because I love the series that you do, Tales from the Internet, and all the other stuff, obviously, that you're doing right now. It has been a home run over the last couple of years, which you should be very proud of the content that you've created. It's rare to have someone that kind of creates something on a level that connects with people. From beginning to end, you know, you did the Man with the Golden Voice, which was a great story, and then you do a Street Fighter, the Forgotten Street Ninja Turtle characters, which is very different genres, but on the same channel, they do very well, you know, equally as good. So you're really hitting all grounds here. Do you have anything planned? What's the next step for your channel?
I definitely am going to be continuing this series and the gaming series. Something different that I've been wanting to experiment with is something a little less research heavy and more in the moment when it comes to internet stuff. So I was thinking of doing something where I'm looking at different kinds of websites pertaining to a certain topic. For example, one of the ideas I had was just digging into the archives of old eFeds.
Oh, that's awesome.
And seeing what I could find.
I ran one.
Yeah.
EHW, Extreme Hardcore Wrestling.
Yes.
Of course it was Extreme Hardcore Wrestling.
Yeah.
I was the owner, the GM, and the champion of the eFed.
Perfect. I've seen that set up so many times.
Yeah, I was the I ran the promotion and I put myself over. No, listen, if you that's another weird subculture thing, right? You grew up in a certain time period. That was a thing. Like we used to do, like we did the role playing. We had characters. Mm-hmm. We had to do promos. You had to write your part of the match, email it to the guy that was, I guess, the booker, and he would compile the winner and the loser.
Yeah, there were so many different ways the rule sets were too. That was one of them. Whoever writes the best promo wins.
Yeah. Best is a stretch, especially if you're a 14-year-old writing a promo.
Oh, yeah.
about your character. It says a lot about somebody how if you're like 13, 14 years old or 15 years old and you're in an eFed and you're writing about your character, you're describing them, it'll say a lot about the psyche of how you see yourself.
The best were the ones that you would pick an actual wrestler. But more often than not, the wrestler wound up not resembling their actual human counterpart in any kind of way.
So wait,
like, I remember there's this one dude who he role-played the great Sasuke, but he would have these elaborate things where he's, like, in a suit looking out at a mountaintop and giving this whole gentlemanly speech. And I'm like, I don't know that he does that.
So,
but it was really well written at the same time.
The great Sasuke standing on a mountaintop in a suit, staring in the abyss.
Yeah, I remember that. I remember that specific promo very vividly.
Were you in one where you created your own character, or were you in one that like you were Rob Van Dam or Stone Cold Steve Austin?
I did both types.
Yeah, I remember I was in both types too. The best is there was a point in this at one era. Let's say 1999. Or 2000, around the time that No Mercy came out, where everybody's character that I went to school with was a Jeff Hardy clone.
Oh, God.
Everybody had Jenko jeans. Everybody was very much into, you know, dark metal. Everybody had an upside down cross or like a pentagram or whatever on their outfits, and they were very dark characters. At one point, we banned Jeff Hardy clones.
See, my guys were all t-shirt wrestlers who had DDTs.
That everybody was Tommy Dreamer?
Yeah.
That's awesome. Dude, that would be phenomenal if you did that, if you went down those GeoCity sites, I guess, and found it. I have my promos on a disc I just found on a CD. That,
oh, my God.
I have a lot of the, like, and it's so cringy to look back, you know? It's so cringy, a 15-year-old Andrew writing a promo for his wrestling character. By the way, my guys were all jacked up. It says a lot. Everybody was steroided out. If I was envisioning my character, he was wearing jeans, he wore the tights, and then a black tight t-shirt. So I guess I was Tommy Dreamer also. Maybe that was a thing.
It definitely was a thing.
Everybody was a jacked up Tommy Dreamer at one point. The great Sasuke, though, that takes the cake, staring into the...
Staring off a mountaintop.
Staring off a mountaintop. Dude, I would love for you to do something like that. And also, if you do wrestling stuff, obviously we would love more wrestling stuff. I know a lot of our viewers, I was discussing that you're coming on, they were very excited. A lot of them are fans of your content, so
yeah.
It's amazing. Are you doing anything? Are you going to any shows during WrestleMania week here in New York?
Actually, my friend Charlie, I was trying to figure out how I was going to get to the New Japan Ring of Honor thing at Madison Square Garden. And then he hits me up. He's like, yeah, I have an extra ticket. You want it? I'm like, fuck yeah.
Of course, yeah. Of course.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter if Kenny Omega's not there. It's fine.
Yeah. I have no idea what the card is. Oh, you just got to say New Japan at Madison Square Garden. And I'm like, yeah, I'm there.
So I know that you you're on and off with the wrestling stuff. I assume since you brought up the tapes, you were a New Japan fan or All Japan fan when you were younger.
Yeah.
Was there anything?
Actually, when it comes to Japanese wrestling, when I was younger, I was more into FMW.
Oh, listen, Hayabusa, come on.
Yeah.
How are you not?
I mean, I was just a super, super duper into ECW, and then they had that collaboration with FMW, which got me into that. And then there's actually, you might remember this, there is this, in Queens Center Mall, there's this kiosk where they had all the VHS tapes, and I would just get FMW tapes from that store.
Yeah, so I wouldn't go there, I would go to the Wrestling Universe on Springfield.
Okay.
Do you remember that one on Springfield?
That was I guess like deeper into Queens.
That's the other side, yeah. So we had a store called the Wrestling Universe, and the guy, Jack Sabbath, he was a promoter. Actually, he just put on a show, ICW, I believe in Queens. He just put on a show. I think Scott Steiner headlined it.
Oh, my God.
Scott Steiner had some insane match. So he always gets like these big names, and he had a store, and he would do these meet and greets there. And one time, RVD and Sabu were there to do a meet and greet. So I'm like, yeah, fuck yeah, I'm going to go. It's RVD and Sabu. I waited online with the worst people on the planet. I was like 14 years old. We're talking monster people. These were goonies, all of them. And I waited online. I finally got to meet them. And Sabu was a giant dick. And RVD had zero interest to be there at that point. I met RVD after that, and I told him the story, and he was like, yeah, man, we did this signing. It was sucked. He was really nice about it. I took a picture with him like a year later after that. But it was a terrible experience. The other one was I waited for Taz. I waited like 4 hours to meet Taz, and he was a total dick also.
Damn.
I never did it again. I never went to see any of them.
I don't think I've ever attended a meet and greet now I think of it.
Yeah, it was like $20 on a Saturday morning.
I went to one, and it wasn't that long ago. It was when Mick Foley put that comic out. He did a signing as Santa Claus.
Was that disappointing for you, that he's Santa Claus and not Mick Foley?
No, because it was such a... I guess there were layers to it, so it made it extra amusing for me. Because Mick Foley was doing a signing. Santa Claus was doing a signing. It just happened to be that Santa Claus was Mick Foley.
And Mick Foley's Cactus Jack, and Cactus Jack is Mankind. Yeah.
Santa's like the fourth face of Foley.
Oh, my God. You know, at this point, that's actually a true answer.
Yeah.
So you would go by those FMW tips. I was ready to wrap this up because we're past 30 minutes that I told you.
Yeah.
But I kind of want to get your opinion on this before we wrap it up. What was intriguing to you about the FMW stuff?
I uh I mean, at the time, I just really loved the deathmatch shit.
Perfectly said.
Yeah.
That's perfectly said. Guys,
looking back now, those guys were they were better than your average deathmatch wrestler technically too. So it makes it hold up even if you look back at those matches more than a lot of that stuff does. But even now, like, a lot of people like to shit on the deathmatch stuff. I still have a soft spot for it.
For like CZW and stuff like that.
Yeah.
I don't shit on it. I have a, I guess, 35-year-old me. I don't know. It's not there anymore. Maybe I become a wrestling elitist to some extent. Like, some of the stuff I find cool. Like, I could watch Onita and Terry Funk in a, you know, an exploding bar wire match.
Yeah.
I don't know if I could watch a CZW match right now.
Yeah. Actually, now that I think about it, speaking of that topic, I am planning on doing a video about the Mike Levy incident.
Oh, dude, that's awesome.
Yeah, I need to figure out how I want to present it and find as much as the early message board content as I can, which could be, sometimes finding stuff from old message boards could be kind of tricky.
Who did he wrestle? Who did Mike Levy wrestle? Mickey Knuckles?
Mickey Knuckles, yeah.
That was it. My God, I can't remember. I can't believe I have that in my memory.
Yeah, and then the entire locker room after.
Yeah, I can't believe that. That's, you know, sometimes I think about why I have a memory of something and how much space it's taking up where I haven't been able to get something else in my mind. This is one of those things that's taken up the space. Justin, thank you so much for coming on, man. This was awesome. I reached out just on a whim. I was like, hey, I want to, you know, I've been watching your stuff for so long, and we talk about you every now and then on the show, and you just put out a video. I'm like, I'm just going to message him and see if he wants to come on the show and we could do something, you know? Yeah. We'd love to have you in studio one day. That'll be cool too, if you're up for it. You're a guy from Queens. You put out amazing content. Where can people find you and subscribe to you?
Instagram, I'm Justin Wang YT. Twitter, Justin Wang. YouTube, Wang Wang Wang. And I've been doing Twitch a lot more. So that's Justin Wang on Twitch.
Very, very cool. Everybody, Justin Wang, go subscribe to him. Go follow him. Awesome stuff. And we'll have this video up probably by tonight or tomorrow morning, depending on if John is going to edit this in time or if I'm going to have to edit this. So make sure you subscribe to us here on YouTube and, of course, subscribe to Justin. Thanks again to Justin Wang for coming on. We'll see you all next time. Take care.